Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan is set to meet with the Congressional Black Caucus after members called his recent comments on inner-city poverty highly offensive. Ryan said on Bill Bennett's talk radio show that there was a tailspin of culture in our inner cities in particular, of men not working, and just generations of men not even thinking about working or learning the value of work. He later clarified his remarks. He called them inarticulate and said that this has nothing to do with race. In his clarification, he said, "I was not implicating the culture of one community, but of society as a whole. We have allowed our society to isolate or quarantine the poor rather than integrate people into our communities. The predictable result has been multi-generational poverty and little opportunity." So we will welcome your reaction to Ryan's comments and his approach to helping the poor as we talk with two guests from different perspectives. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, March 20th. So what is the root of poverty? What will help people out of poverty? Will Ryan's policies do that? Let me welcome our first guest. Lenny McAllister is an author and conservative commentator. His books include Diary of a Mad Black PYC, Proud Young Conservative, and Spoken Thoughts from an Amalgamated Advocate in Today's America. His website is LennyMcAllister.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
It's good to have you back on the show. So, well, as a black conservative, what was your reaction to Ryan's comments initially?
That they were nearsighted at best. I think perhaps well-intended, but nearsighted and shallow when you start talking about urban Americans. And generally speaking, urban means black. When you're talking about urban-based Americans not having a culture of work, not wanting to work, not wanting to think about work, there are certain things that Congressman Ryan did say that are true in regards to the fact that too many of those Americans are separated from the American dream, separated from the goals that middle-class Americans have when it comes to education and employment. But to imply that there's an intent or a lack of focus or desire to work is wrong. And I've said this repeatedly. I've said it to Tea Party groups. I've said it to conservatives. I've said it on the air myself. When you have a kid, and he's going to the people that don't want to work, that want to be on the government dole and want to get involved in illegal activity. When you have a kid that's out there 17 years old on the south side of Chicago, where I lived for 3 years, selling drugs at 5 degrees at 2 o'clock in the morning, that's not a socialist that's trying to live on the government goal. That's a capitalist that's focused on the wrong things. When you see a man take $3 and buy a 24-unit jug of water and sell each unit for $1, that's not a socialist trying to live on the government dole. That's a capitalist that just does not have the opportunity to really be a small businessman. And rather than focusing on examples like that and figuring out how to shift people from the depths of poverty into something where we can revitalize our communities, we take this approach, unfortunately, too often as conservatives and say that there's a culture of people that don't want to work. And that is just wrong. It's un-American and it's narrow-minded. And you can't lead America back to greatness with those type of sentiments when you look at the working poor and you look at urban America and the plights that we're going through right now.
He then chastised himself and said that he was inarticulate in expressing that and said that this was not about race, that he was not implicating the culture of one community, but of society as a whole. Do you accept his clarification?
I accept the sentiment behind the clarification. I've had an opportunity to meet with Congressman Ryan during my congressional run last year in Chicago, so I understand what he wants to do. I understand how he would like to apply his philosophies and some of his plans to helping the poor in America. However, I also know that there is a growing sentiment within the Republican Party and within the conservative movement of taking a particular approach to urban America and thinking that you have to deal with a culture that doesn't want to work. There's a culture there that doesn't believe that the pathway to prosperity is there for them anymore. Once we as conservatives can show them that that pathway is still there, whether it's through school vouchers or school choice, whether it's there through reinvestment in urban communities to bring businesses back, people will respond and will get back to work. So although I accept the sentiment of what he was trying to say, I don't accept that he really understands what's going on in urban America and understands the mindset, the backbone, and the guts of people that are working through generational poverty.
Another black Republican, Ron Christie, wrote a piece for the Daily Beast saying Ryan isn't racist, that he's right, that he said 75% of blacks born in America today are not blessed to have a mother and father living under one roof, and went on to discuss young black men impregnating young black women and so on. How do we address problems like this?
Those problems are irrelevant. I mean, I know Ron Christie, and I respect him, and I love him as a child of God, but I would tell him that he's also being narrow-minded and shallow when it comes to this, because if you go back 80 years ago, roughly 100% of black people born in the South below the Mason-Dixon line were born and not blessed to be born outside of Jim Crow, but yet they found a way to get an education, they found a way to own business, and they found a way to change America, and not just America's hearts, but America's laws. It is not necessarily because of a situation that somebody's born into. It's how do you find the pathways to climb out of your previous situation to a new situation. I would say that 100% of Americans born in the 1970s, like I was born at a time where America did not believe in itself anymore and was going through a horrible recession with double-digit inflation and the like. And then a president by the name of Ronald Reagan came along, and America went through a resurgence in the 80s. There are always obstacles for Americans to get through, and to pin it on just the poor and those going through generational poverty without looking at the circumstances surrounding that and just isolating the victim is cruel. And any black Republican, and I've said this directly to many black Republicans, any black Republican that understands the issues that are going on in urban America without applying their conservatism to help build the pathways out is merely just preaching to the choir without tackling the challenge.
Yeah. Well, the black unemployment rate is in double digits, and we will be talking with a guest after 7:30, a columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who says that job creation has to be a huge part of the answer to poverty, especially poverty in Milwaukee. Talk about why black unemployment is so high and how we bring it down.
I think one of the things we have to look at, Joy, is the fact that we are looking at a double unemployment rate that has been going on for decades. This is not a new phenomenon. And once you start realizing that this is a phenomenon that has existed for decades, then you must understand that because of the gaps in education, the gaps in access to capital, even under President Obama, with the Small Business Administration, only roughly, I believe, 2% of the loan monies and resources that have gone out from that agency has gone to minority businesses. When you start looking at those type of gaps and how long those gaps have existed, therein lies the issues that you have to tackle. You have to make sure that small business owners that are going to exist and serve people in urban environments have the opportunity to grow as businesses. You can't just cut them off after a couple of years and say, if you don't turn a profit or you don't sustain your stuff, you're going to fail. Because even with small business owners, even with the working middle class in urban America, you're still dealing with people that have been two and three generations behind the American dream. Therefore, they need a little bit more time to be able to grow, whether that is through an aggressive policy from the banking industry, whether it's from a private sector-led policy, or whether it's something from the government. I would probably argue that it needs to be from the private sector. But you need that kind of business investment. You need to make sure that people also have opportunities to send their kids to good schools with the tax money that they're putting in, and that goes to school choice. Doesn't mean that you close down all the public schools, but when you know that you've had a public school problem that's been behind parochial schools and private schools for generations, you have to provide more of your population in the 21st century to be able to get the best opportunity possible for education to compete globally, because that is where people are going to be stuck in generational poverty for the next 100 years if we can't allow them to not only compete with their neighbors in their communities, but compete with the global community when it comes to education.
We are talking with Lenny McAllister. He is an author and a conservative commentator, and we are welcoming your thoughts and questions for him. Our conversation prompted by Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan's self-described inarticulate comments about inner-city poverty. And we are talking about those remarks and what might help the poor in lifting people out of poverty. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's now 20 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, March 20th. We are talking with a guest about Paul Ryan's comments about inner city poverty, and we are welcoming your thoughts and questions as well. Let's take a call right away from Sherry in Milwaukee. Hi, Sherry.
Yeah, hi, Joy. I want to first commend the caller. I'm not a conservative, and frequently when I hear black, and I am black, and frequently when I hear black conservatives, I'm more offended than when I hear anybody else. And I think the caller or your guest has brought a balanced perspective, so I appreciate that. I want to say that Paul Ryan, you know, was citing the works of a white supremacist nationalist thinker. And I guess I find it hard to accept his apology when he was citing the works of someone who is a white supremacist, and he doesn't know that. And I think it also relates to the show you had the other day, Joy, about white privilege. He's privileged not to know the truth about poverty, period, in the United States. And to use the word culture is clearly a signal to other white people that these black people are stealing your resources and that they're lazy. This is a conversation that has been going on since slavery, since slaves were working in the field, sun up to sundown, that they're lazy, so they have to be beaten. I mean, this laziness thing is a big issue, and so I don't accept his inarticulateness. When it comes to jobs, I think that racism still plays a very big part in hiring and employment. So to say it's just, if they all got good educations and presented themselves at the factory door, they get a job, is not true. Because there are plenty of people who are presenting themselves who are not getting jobs, and racism is still an issue in hiring.
What about racism in hiring, Lenny?
Well, and number one, I appreciate her calling in. Let me go third to first. I think that racism still is an issue in America. I mean, there are certain studies that have been done where, for example, when the recession was at full bloom, where black Ivy League graduates still had the double unemployment rate compared to their white Ivy League graduate counterparts, people between the ages of 23 and 30. I believe that was a study that was done in early 2010. As well, if you look at some of the other studies that have come up, for example, they did a study where they took the same exact resume. They put Susan on the top of one. They put Shaniqua on top of the other, the same exact resume. Susan got a phone call back and invited in to come do an interview face-to-face, where Shaniqua couldn't even get a phone call back, and that was done with a multitude of employers over the course of that study. So we obviously know that there are still some things baked into the American cake that indicates to us that we're not quite there when it comes to getting over racism in America. I grant you that. At the same time, though, with better education, it provides us a better opportunity to do one of two things. A, be better candidates for work, or B, be better positioned to fight the racism through the appropriate channels to overcome the racism from a legal sense. That's what transpired in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. We didn't just march, but we also had the opportunity to go to the courtrooms to strike down the Dred Scott case, to strike down Brown versus Board of Education in 1954, to strike down Jim Crow and other places. So it has to be a two-prong approach. You have to have the education in order to present yourselves or present ourselves as the best candidates possible. But at the same exact time, we also have to be positioned as Americans and as African Americans to be ready to go to the courtrooms, to be able to protest if necessary, in order to make sure that racism is overcome. So there's some legitimacy to what the caller said, but we also have to make sure that we're doing our part to be prepared either way.
And was Congressman Ryan blowing a so-called dog whistle and sending a signal that that blacks are lazy?
Here's the issue that I would have, just coming from my unique perspective, having an opportunity to talk with Congressman Ryan one-on-one. I don't think he was blowing that dog whistle. But does that dog whistle exist? Absolutely. And the prism that you have to look through this through is this. Congressman Ryan may not be racist himself, but when you're talking about a conservative brand where white supremacists were invited to speak at CPAC just 2 years ago, when you've seen other comments coming from, for example, Governor John Sununu referring to a war hero, Colin Powell, just because he didn't agree with Mitt Romney a couple of years ago. When you see some of the other comments that have come from conservatives in regards to African Americans, in regards to black culture, black America, urban America, and then these comments come out, you may have a well-intended guy that's trying to find the right economic plan to shift and remove poverty from many pockets of urban America, but through the prism of what the party has done and what our party has said over the last 30 to 35 years, that's a problem. And as a leader of the party, he should be dutifully aware of what he says every single time he speaks on this issue. I know as an African-American conservative, I have to make sure that I am showing that I'm a conservative, show that conservative values can apply to black people and black people that are struggling in America, but also show that I have the proud legacy of being an African-American that understands the issues, that wants to tackle those issues. Congressman Ryan, as a leader within the Republican Party and the last vice presidential nominee, has that same exact obligation.
Is it a problem that Congressman Ryan and anybody else would point to research done by bell curve author Charles Murray, I think his name is, and his thesis or theory that blacks have lower IQs than whites?
That's an indication of what's going on in the Republican Party. When you don't have enough black experts around you, when you don't have enough African Americans that have lived in urban America growing up, and more importantly, live in urban America. Now, it doesn't do you any good if you grew up poor at 7 years old, but you're 67 years old and you've lived in the suburbs for the last 30 years and you've been driving a Lexus for the last 20. You're not going to be able to relate to poverty in 21st century America. And if you're leaning on people that used to be poor 50 years ago, or people that are quote unquote experts studying this from afar as if this is some type of scientific experiment, you're not going to have the human touch necessary to lead in America. And too often, we as Republicans want to deal with walks, but we don't want to deal with people. When you lead in America, you must understand people. America is not a business. America is a country. Therefore, you can't deal with it just like we would deal with widgets. You have to deal with women and men. You have to deal with the real stories of people, and that takes relationship. And let's be honest, Republicans and black America have not had a relationship in quite some time. That has to change if you're going to get real solutions from our party.
You know, Congressman Ryan released a report criticizing the war on poverty. I'd like to talk a little bit about whether you think that war on poverty encouraged further poverty, but also just talk about your how your conservative values apply to poverty. What conservative principles can lift people out of poverty?
I think, number one, I think we need to make sure that we have economic investment. We need to make sure that those that have continue to invest in it. It needs to be done in a private way, because the rigidness of government is not going to lift people out of poverty the way we need people to be lifted out of poverty. We need innovators and private investors to understand the untapped potential that we have in our urban environments, to go into the schools, to create apprenticeships, to be able to bring people along and to really nourish the talent and the innovative minds that we have in young urban America. That's what it's going to take, number one. Number two, it's going to take the type of civil rights movement, but in a nuanced way for the 21st century, to lead people from the new Jim Crow that we're facing right now when it comes to jails, when it comes to high unemployment, when it comes to high crime, and get that talent refocused to the greatest that we can be as an American nation. That's how we're going to make America great once again, through revitalizing our cities and, more importantly, revitalizing the poor in our cities. I think that when you apply conservative principles to get human capital as well as financial capital back in urban environments, create tax policies that not only encourage businesses to reinvest, but also encourage people moving into new areas to invest part of their tax dollars as well as their time, because the combination of time and money is an investment necessary to spark the minds and spark the spirits of those living in these communities to go ahead and say, here's the pathway back to prosperity. Here's the pathway back to the American dream. All you have to do is show them a clear pathway, and I guarantee you, people will follow it. Nobody wants to be poor in America. People want to be successful. We just have to show them the pathway.
I don't know if we're going to have time. Todd in Green Bay, we have a minute before news. What's the point you'd like to make?
Yeah, good morning. First of all, I guess if urban means black, then I guess the Urban Institute means black institutes. I'm really just put off by your guest's comments because everything that he has said fails to address the problem. These are problems that need to be addressed head on. And I think the first place it starts with the out of wedlock birth rates.
Well, he says that you're not proposing solutions to the problem. Can I, 30 seconds, Lenny?
I absolutely am presenting solutions to the problems. Number one, you have to have education, because even when you have a poor mother with three kids and she's single, if she has education, she pushes education, her kids will get out of it. All these conservatives love to push Ben Carson. Ben Carson didn't come from a together home. Many of the other leaders that you saw in the 21st and 20th century did not come out of together homes. You have to have education. You have to have jobs. That's how you're going to climb out of it.
Thank you, Lenny. This is the Ideas Network. We will continue our discussion about Congressman Paul Ryan's recent comments about the culture of poverty, and we will welcome your questions and views for our next guest. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this Thursday, March 20th. Congressman Ryan said on a radio show, last week that there was a problem with the culture of poverty in the inner cities.
We have got this tailspin of culture in our inner cities in particular, of men not working and just generations of men not even thinking about working or learning the value and the culture of work. And so there's a real culture problem here that has to be dealt with.
The Congressional Black Caucus called those remarks highly offensive. Ryan is set to meet with caucus members to discuss what he said and what he meant. He said that he was being inarticulate and that this had nothing to do with race. We welcome your reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our next guest is James Causey, columnist at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His recent piece is called Representative Paul Ryan's Message for the Poor. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, James, what is your message to Representative Ryan?
The message is simple. Work jobs. I mean, it really comes down to that. I mean, he is right on a number of issues. There are a lot of men, in, especially in Milwaukee, black men of color, and black men and men of color out of work. One statistics puts that number or places that number at, you know, upwards of 40%. And it's a reason for that. In the 1970s, Milwaukee had a large manufacturing base, and that provided employment for people like my father and a lot of men who worked in welding and all kinds of manufacturing type jobs like A.L. Smith, Baker Stratton, Carnes Fager, and a lot of companies like that. those jobs provided over 50,000 jobs to men in this area. And you look at today, those jobs are gone, and nothing will really replace them. Not the type of jobs that these men could do or that their children could do. And so as a result of that and other things, we have a lot of men out of work. And, you know, instead of criticizing people like that who are out of work, I think the thing that you have to do is find the jobs, create the jobs, or provide the training necessary so men of color can find other types of work.
Yeah. Well, he was saying, even though he said he was inarticulate and was trying not to implicate the culture of one community in his clarification, but of society as a whole, he was saying that there was this tailspin going on, generational poverty, and that people were not working and not even wanting to work. What about that?
I mean, the whole part of not wanting to work, that's kind of troubling because, you know, if you provide the jobs, people will work. I mean, I don't know of many men who don't want to work and make an honest living. I mean, that's one of the basic principles of a man, especially if you have children, to provide for your family. However, when you can't find work, you have to pick up cans and turn those into the aluminum place just to have a couple of dollars in your pocket. And you fill out dozens and dozens and sometimes hundreds of applications, not even to get a call back. That's a problem. I mean, there are some job centers that tell you not to put your address down because they know that you could potentially be discriminated against based on where you live. So when you have issues like that, and yeah, this is a cultural problem and a race problem too, especially in a city like Milwaukee, and especially when you said it inner city. So I wasn't referring to race, but we know that this is a hyper segregated city and the most hyper gated cities in the country. So when you say something like the inner city of Milwaukee, yeah, of course you're talking about blacks or poor whites. I mean, those are the two classes of people that you're talking about. And so to come back later and say, oh, I wasn't trying to put it in as far as race. Well, what were you trying to do then? Just based on the sheer numbers and the hyper-segregation of the city, those are the only two categories that you could be talking about.
Yeah, so you don't buy the clarification or the, I guess, apology that he was being inarticulate?
I'll put it this way. I'm a bit surprised that the words that he chose to describe the inner city, because actually, Paul Ryan, I like the guy. I've met him a couple of times. He's been to the paper for editorial board meetings. I actually like him. I like a lot of things that he says and stands for. However, I was a little surprised at that because he's usually more cautious.
I'm going to take our break right now, and maybe we can call James back and just see if another phone call will clear up our telephone line. It's a little fuzzy, a little hard to understand every word, and we want to understand every word as we are talking about the comments that Paul Ryan made last week on a radio show, talking about his self-described inarticulate comments on inner-city poverty that were deemed racist by many. And we are welcoming your reactions and your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan is set to meet with the Congressional Black Caucus after his self-described inarticulate comments on inner city poverty were called highly offensive by the Congressional Black Caucus. Our guest in this half hour also found them offensive. He is James Causey. He is a columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And I wanted to ask you, James, to respond to some of our Facebook comments. David on Facebook says, if you don't think there's some truth to what Ryan is saying, then you're the ones who haven't left your ivory towers. I think it's unfortunate that he concentrated on the inner city because poverty is generational in many locales for many of the same reasons. So what truth is there to what Ryan is saying, James Causey?
Well, there's many truths. One of the truths is that there are a lot of men and a lot of people out of work. I mean, and that's across the country. That's not just in the inner city. However, when you look at men of color, you know, when you have more than 40% of these men in the city out of work, that's a problem. That's a major problem that needs to be addressed. And everybody knows this. This isn't something new. But not enough is being done to create those jobs in the inner city to put these men back to work. We have a area, the 35th Street area, where the old A.L. Smith building used to be. And honestly, that place has been pretty much vacant for the past decade. That's perfect for a Menominee Valley to the north. I mean, Menominee Valley is growing, it's booming. It's an area where you have all types of jobs, from minimum wage jobs on up to people making, you know, $30, $40 an hour. We could make that same thing happen on the city's north side. But we have to have the people thinking outside the box to create those kind of jobs that put those kind of people to work. It's not hard. I mean, some of the things that the mayor and people have mentioned is that a lot of people are afraid of crime and things like that. Well, you know, that's where you have to stand on the use your bully pulpit and tell people, you know, it's not as bad as you think. I live on the north side, and I live less than a mile away from that area, and I've never been robbed. I've never been felt threatened or anything like that. So, I mean, a lot of these reasons for companies not to come in are just not valid.
Let's take a call from John in Racine. Hello, John.
Hi, Joy. Great show today. And concern of the official in the city is that the congressman's talk is bad enough. The actions are worse. What I mean by that is simply that, you know, we are trying to fix our cities and build our communities, and we are very good at what we do here. But the congressman, instead of looking at the programs that we're doing that have had great success in rebuilding inner cities, they are actually taking away funds from CBD. They're not moving ahead on immigration reform, which the business is demanding in our area. And they're taking away funds from preventative programs that actually stop crime and have proven that they can stop crime. So the bigger concern I have is that the congressman is simply not back up the talk about these things.
John, thank you very much for calling. Because your cell phone is breaking up, I'm going to leave it there. And so he's more concerned that Congressman Ryan's policies are making the problem worse. And you heard, I think, some of those policies, you know, immigration reform or not rebuilding, putting money, investing into rebuilding our cities. Your reaction to that, James?
I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily one man's plan. I think what we need is a comprehensive plan for our city. We need local officials involved in that, state officials, and we need national officials involved in this as well. Because when you have a large segment of the community not working, and the chance of them finding work is nil, then we need a collaborative effort by everyone at the table to try to figure out how we can put these men to work. And we need to find what works in other places. I mean, this is not, again, this is not just a Milwaukee problem. This is a rural problem as well. But we got to figure out a way to get these men back to work, because if we don't, it does become a generational problem. And not only does it have an impact on these men, it has an impact on the entire state, because if these men can't find work, they would do illegal things and end up in the prison system, and we all pay for that at a tune of at least $36,000 a year per person.
David on Facebook says, you would be surprised at how the social safety nets disincentivize work. Your skills, if your skills make your work opportunities provide no more than welfare would, why work for it? You want to react to that?
I would say, yeah, in a way it does. That's why I've been one of the people pushing for a raise to the minimum wage, a livable wage, and issues like that. You know, you can't make a living off of $7.25 an hour. You just can't. And if you say, well, these jobs were not meant to be jobs to pay your wages or to make a living off of, then if you work two jobs doing that, then what time do you have to spend with your children and your family? Who's helping to raise them? And your children are out of control. So, why not give a boost to the minimum wage so these people can at least not struggle so much? So it's some truth to that as well.
Let's go to Dave in Madison. Hi, Dave.
Oh, hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say that, you know, your previous guest, I think, was very considerate in his comments toward Mr. Ryan and basically saying, in paraphrasing, that he didn't know what he was talking about, but he means well. But, I'm afraid he's giving Mr. Ryan a bit too much credit. Paul Ryan's a politician. He is in the business of getting reelected and getting his party members reelected. And he knows what he's doing here. And Joy, I think you touched on it briefly before. This is a perfect example of dog whistle politics. And the key, I think, to focus on is his audience. And he was speaking to the voters. And what he was sending, he was sending a message to them. He was saying that white working class voters are basically getting the short end of the stick. And we're the party for you guys. And the Democrats are the party that support the lazy people of color. And, he's simply, in polite society, we can no longer say that, but he's repeating an old trope, as yeah. I think Teresa pointed out earlier, which is that of the lazy person of color. And it's not just black men. It's all, they repeat these things regarding Latinos and others. So it was a calculated message he was trying to send. He just happened to get called on it. And now he's walking it back, and we ought not to give him credit for correcting himself after the fact when he knew full well what he was doing.
Was this an example of so-called dog whistle politics, James Causey?
That's sort of a loaded question. The caller makes a lot of valid points. I'll just leave it at that.
But you did note in your piece that when Paul Ryan said inner city, he meant blacks or Hispanics or poor white people.
Correct. Yeah. That's true. I mean, he is a politician. He was speaking to a particular audience. You know, you have to consider that a lot of politicians cater their messages depending on where they are. He just happened to, get called out on it.
Yeah. Let's go to Diane in Madison. Hi, Diane.
Good morning. Thank you very much for this conversation. One of the things that I have not heard discussed this morning is structural. The very fact that we have a few people sitting on astronomical wealth that, if redistributed, could provide capital to produce employment and small businesses. Why aren't we talking about this? Because you can tell people to be as educated and pressed up as they want to be, but if there is no opportunities, it's all lost.
Yeah. Should we be redistributing wealth to take care of this problem, James Causey?
Yeah, of course. That's what President Barack Obama has been trying to do for the longest. It meets so much resistance. And, surprisingly, it meets resistance from people who are some middle-class people and I don't understand that, because you're not in that upper echelon. You're not part of that 1%. And yet the people who are not part of that 1% are some of the people who get upset when that conversation is placed on the table. And I just don't really get it. I understand when times get tough, people want to hold on to what they have. However, This is a time for us to help those when times are tough. This is when the people who are struggling really, really struggle. And, you know, if this is a land where we're supposed to help our brothers and we believe in being kind to our neighbors, why wouldn't we want to help those who are in need or provide them with the tools that they need so they can work at it and become successful? I guess I don't understand that.
Well, what about Congressman Ryan and other Republicans mostly assert that the war on poverty and all the money that this country has spent on the war on poverty has only encouraged more poverty?
Well, you can make the same argument for the war on drugs. I mean, the war on drugs didn't work because it wasn't the programs that were in place. Didn't go after what it was supposed to go after. It hurt those who were drug addicts, people who really needed to be placed in treatment, as opposed to going after these drug cartels. I think the same thing could be said for the war on poverty. You know, there have been a lot of programs that really didn't do what they were supposed to do. But actually, when you think about the war on poverty, there are a lot of people that benefit off of people being poor, and they don't want to see the system change. And those programs should be shut down, and those people should be run out of business. But, poverty is a business. I mean, there are so many people that benefit off of poor people that it's a shame, and poor people are the ones who suffer. I mean, it's a vicious cycle, and that's the cycle that we should be talking about. It's not the poor people. It's these programs that benefit off the poor who do absolutely nothing to change their conditions.
How hopeful are you that conditions will be changed in terms of poverty in Milwaukee?
First of all, we need to reevaluate these programs that take in millions of dollars every year and they produce very few results. That's where we should start. Secondly, we need to bring people to the table and say, how can we make areas more vibrant? How can we change the culture of people by providing work that they could do? And by, like, that 35th Street area, how can we change that into the Menominee Valley of the North? What do we need to do to make this happen? You know, we have to have clear thinking. And instead of being like the state of no, whenever there's an idea, you know, we're knocking it down so that won't work. Let's figure out how we can make things like that work, because we have to get people to work. Bottom line, unless we start creating jobs and get people to work, nothing will change. It will only get worse, and we all pay for that in the long run.
Thank you very much for being with us.
No problem.
James Causey, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His recent piece is Representative Paul Ryan's Message for the Poor. We have a link to that on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Also talked with Lenny McAllister, who is an author and a black conservative commentator, in our first half hour. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Robin Cherry, and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. We'll talk about the future and big data coming up in our next hour. Tomorrow at this time, we'll talk about a new survey that shows millennials are not hardcore liberals. They're actually quite moderate. We'll learn more about that tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.